10% of its expenditures from general and lottery funds. The majority of the expenditures are made from non-limited funds. And those are things such as loans and grants that go to communities. This slide shows the breakdown of community development programs as opposed to all other programs, which include things as, such as the Tourism Commission, the Arts Commission, the Progress Board, the Film and Video Office, and program staff. So this shows, again, that most of the funding that the department spends is for community programming. This next slide shows the growth in the Economic and Community Development Department is primarily non-limited and federal funds. And the overall growth between the 2001-03 current service level and the governor's recommended budget is about 33% total funds. The majority of that comes from the increase in non-limited funds, and this is primarily due to a proposal which is mentioned earlier about lottery revenue bond bonding. The major budget issues in the governor's recommended budget are broken down on this slide between lottery funds and general fund. And working through the lottery funds section, the first issue is a fund shift of about $3.5 million of lottery funds. And what we did here was to remove $3.5 million of direct lottery funds that would otherwise have been allocated to the agency. And those funds would have been used to help pay for 25 positions. The recommended budget removes that $3.5 million of direct lottery fund and uses interest earnings off of the bond proposal that I'll be discussing a little bit later on. The second issue is some enhanced staffing. There was a lottery bond issue approved by the 1999 legislature that's increased the demand and the workload on staff. And so about 9 FTE or positions are added to the governor's recommended budget, and 7 positions are added in anticipation of that lottery revenue bond package if it should pass in its current form.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hill is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So let me just understand here. So the governor is suggesting that we go out and bond early, live off the interest of the money to fund a program.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Administrative costs or something. Other
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, what he's proposing is that we would bond and then we would revolve the proceeds through a revolving loan fund, and that the interest earnings that would accrue as the loans were brought in and then before they were reloaned again would in fact be able to support the additional staff needed to handle the application process and the identification of projects, that kind of thing.
So that I understand, Lisa, that's a total of 16 positions in that revolving loan fund that's generated. We're going to borrow to get rich here, basically.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay. It's easy, and if we had more, we'd get much richer.
So, Mr. Chair, if I might, then I just take my credit card out, and I max it out, and I just live off the interest that I get in the bank, and then I'll be okay?
As long as you can compound it at higher percentage rates.
Thank you.
I've got the recipe for success.
Please, proceed, Lisa.
The final item there under fund shifts in the lottery fund section is a reduction of $6.7 million of lottery funds that are direct lottery funds that were provided under Senate Bill 710, which I believe was the 1997 legislature. And the proposal is to remove that direct lottery fund and to restore it later on when I talk about the bond package with bond proceeds. And those funds were to go to Columbia River Channel deepening and specifically the Port of Portland. There are some program reductions that are just pure program reduction. There's no backfill of the reduction with any kind of other funds. And those include about $1.8 million of lottery funds that were going to be spent in the Community Development Fund We haven't specified what those reductions are going to be, but it would be a reduction in community development fund services. And then the second one actually is a reduction in another state agency. The Department of Human Services has, as part of its reduction plan, a $1.3 million general fund reduction in the health division. And the proposal is to use funding from the Economic and Community Development Department to backfill that reduction. If this doesn't happen, then we would lose the safe drinking water federal funds.
Is that a one-for-one match, Lisa?
Mr. Chair, I can't remember off the top of my head. It's a significantly, I think, better match, and I can get that for you, though. And that leads to the big financing package, which is the sale of about $225 million in lottery-backed bonds for rural infrastructure. I have another slide that will go through this in more depth. And so at this point, I'd like to just finish up by noting that there is a general fund package with about $1.6 million of general fund for an agricultural tourism project. This project is in conjunction with the Department of Agriculture and will promote Oregon products both nationally and internationally under the brand Oregon theme. And this last slide shows the bond package and its distribution. As I said, there's about $225.2 million in bond proceeds that are proposed in this budget. And there are two major categories that these bond proceeds would go to. The first one is the Rural Infrastructure Investment Project, or element, and about $196.4 million of bond proceeds would go to this investment. Of that, about $173.4 million would actually be available for projects. And then bond financing costs and reserves require that about $23 million of the bond proceeds be held in reserve or pay for such things as bond counsel and underwriter fees and printing costs, et cetera.
Representative Hill is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are these bond proceeds, are these assuming that the bonds that were authorized by the last legislature, which I think there's some scheduled specifically for the Columbia River dredging, are supposed to be let, I believe, in the March to May timeframe of this year. Is this saying we're not going to let those out and use those that bonding proceeds, or is this in addition to those dollars?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, this is an addition. Essentially, the Columbia River deepening or dredging project did not happen on the time frame that the 1999 legislature may have anticipated. And so that section of the slide actually moves forward into the 2001-03 biennium, the anticipated expenditures under House Bill 2153, the bond proceeds. Then the $45 million approximately that was available for community investments in this biennium, the proceeds will still be available, but the rural infrastructure investment is on top of that.
President Hill, continue to follow up.
If I remember correctly, when we crafted 2153, there was some either or that kick in there at the end. So in terms of there's some choices that will have to be made. So we are going to bond for the $10 million for the channel deepening in the Columbia out of last session's bonds proceeds. So we're talking total will be $38 million, which would be into this pot going forward.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, I'm not sure I'm following your question.
I'm trying to understand in terms of last session we authorized $10 million for the bonding that will happen in the May time period in this biennium.
Mr. Chair,
is it going to be $38 million or $28 million?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the bonding, the actual bonding can't occur until there is indication that this project can go forward. But it's my understanding that the $10 million is an enduring authorization. That is, that when that authority occurs, then that would be bonded, and the 28 is in addition to that.
Thank you.
And Representative Johnson is recognized.
Mr. Chairman, two questions. One is a follow-up to Representative Hills. Is there a time schedule that you all anticipate for when this project will go forward? I understand there's reconsultation going on. The permit has been pulled. What time frame are we looking at?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the last I'd heard was that they were expecting it to go forward. I hadn't heard anything about a schedule specifically, but I can check into that for you.
I think that would be a pretty essential component of taking a look at this. Mr. Chair,
certainly follow up, Representative.
Is there some additional detail on what this rural infrastructure investment package looks like? Some definition around what constitutes the program and where those investments will be made, the process for reviewing projects?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, yes. There will be quite a bit of information that comes out during the Ways and Means hearings in the subcommittee, and also there are materials that are being prepared at this point that should help members look through the specifics clearly. And as soon as those are available, we can get those to you.
I'd welcome that. Thank you very much.
Representative Hayden is recognized.
Mr. Chairman, a question and a follow-up, please. Did I understand from an earlier presentation that that this $225 million would pretty well tap out the bonding capability of the lottery?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hayden, this, along with some other components, would tap out the remaining bonding capacity.
For how long, a period of time?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hayden, I believe that somewhere between 10 and 20 years may be the answer, but I'm not sure.
Okay, that's
10 years, I'm sorry.
That's good. That's good. We're all term limited anyway. So, and one further follow-up question, Mr. Chairman. In 1995, there was a proposal to bond $750 million of lottery bonds for Portland Light Rail. And I, although you're not making policy here, I presume that this would move that concept off the table.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hayden, I'm really not familiar with the transportation side of things, so if I could...
Oh, wait.
Okay.
But you are familiar with lottery.
Somewhat.
Thank you. Senator Yee is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your 97 to 99 biennial report, the department has a return for investment of a ratio of 3-1. Can you tell me what is the department's methodology in calculating this ratio? And would it have happened without the department's efforts? Because the private sector would be investing the money without paying it to the government as tax payments.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, I would have to defer to the agency for that, but we can get that information for you.
Yes, will you give the information to me?
Yes.
About what time would that be?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, I would have to contact the agency people to find out specifically.
Would 3:30 this afternoon be soon enough?
Oh, that would be great.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if you really are serious about 3:30, we have to at least wait until tomorrow.
Thank you. Follow-up, Senator Yee.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I'm a little late coming in. You might have already discussed this, but I noticed that the FTE has increased about 15 FTE from 144.74 to 160 FTE under the governor's recommended budget. Can you explain why it seems that all the other departments are facing such serious cutbacks in FTE, and this one has a real increase?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, the increase is essentially 15 FTE, and it is a combination of workload demands from the current bond effort during this biennium and the anticipated workload from the bonding package that the governor recommended in his budget. And that is anticipated to be paid for with earnings off of the revolving loans that would become available under those bonding options. So this agency has a little bit different funding opportunities that enable it to actually add staff, while some others that your direct general fund appropriations have not been able to do that.
We'll have some opportunity, Senator Yee, to go into that in further detail in the subcommittee.
Follow-up question.
Certainly, go ahead. Please, Senator Yee, follow
so,
up.
So this is this 16 FTE is funded from interest earnings. So if interest earning goes down, then the FTE will decline?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, theoretically, at some point in the future, I imagine that might be a possibility, but at this point, it doesn't look like that is likely to happen.
It appears to be an arbitrage on the full borrowing of the maximum capacity, at least through 2006, is my understanding as I look at the Debt Policy Advisory Commission's report, that through 2006, this $225 million is the capacity. And so if you arbitrage that, there's enough potential for 16 positions there. Mm-hmm. We have Katie Coble with us today from the governor's office. We invite Katie to come forward and enlighten us on any additional detail as we're wrapping up the OECDD.
Mr. Chairman, I just thought I'd clarify the questions on the Columbia River dredging, and Representative Hill is leaving. There are no bonds issued this current biennium for Columbia River dredging. That's all being moved into next biennium, and the shift of lottery funds out of that account accounts for the increase in the amount of bonds that you see requested to pay for the dredging.
So the total amount, Ms. Cove, is the 38.8, or it's 28.8 total with the carryover authority?
The amount that would be requested is the 28.8 million, and that covers what would have been issued this biennium, plus the amount that is shifted from direct lottery appropriation to bond.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. When we got ready to sell those bonds, nobody wanted them. So,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just to wrap up, we will be spending an extensive amount of time, I believe, in the subcommittee discussing the bonding issue, discussing the use of interest earnings, and discussing the impact of the way this budget is structured on the delivery of community development services and programs, the impact on staffing, on other options that the legislature may have. So be prepared to spend a significant amount of time on this issue. And now I'm going to turn, if there are no further questions in this area,
Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Christian. Turn
this over to Lori Byerly from the Legislative Fiscal Office to talk about the Employment Department. Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. As Robin said, I'm Lori Byerly from the Legislative Fiscal Office, and I'd like to talk about the Employment Department. The department has four programs. The first program is the Support the Unemployed program, and this accounts for the bulk of the department's expenditures and funding. The purpose of this program is to manage the unemployment insurance system by collecting employer taxes and issuing worker benefits. The next program in the department is the Promote Employment and Develop the Workforce program. This program analyzes and provides employment data and services to employers, job seekers, and policymakers. The third program in the department is the Child Care Division. The Child Care Division's focus is on regulation and safety of child care programs and encourages accessibility, affordability, and quality of child care. The fourth program in the department is a pilot project that began in January of 2000. It's called the Central Hearings Panel, or you may see it referred to as the Hearing Officer Panel. It's a pilot program that consolidates hearing services for several state agencies in order to better provide a fair and more impartial hearing process to those clients of the state that are probably not real happy with the services they're receiving at that point in time. The next slide shows how the funding in the department and the expenditures are split out amongst the programs. As you'll see, the unemployment insurance program does take up the bulk of the department's expenditures and funds. A lot of that is due to payments of claims for the unemployment insurance program. The Promote Employment Develop the Workforce program is predominantly funded by other funds,
It also has some federal funding for job placement and worker prep programs. Part of the other funds come from contracts with other state agencies, such as vocational rehabilitation and adult family services that pay the department for providing those contracted job placement services. The child care program is funded almost entirely by federal funds. Most of the money, about 80% of it, is transferred directly to adult family services to provide direct services to clients, such as student workers, low-income parents, migrant workers, and parents who may be receiving some substance abuse treatment. A portion of the funding for child care is general fund, and that is used to supplement other funds received from licensing fees and child care regulation to promote those regulation programs. The central hearings panel is entirely other funded, and these funds come from payment for services for contracting out to those client agencies that they provide the hearing services for. Once again, this is a four-year pilot program, which will end at the end of the year 2003. Are there any questions?
Questions of the members of the committee? Representative Schrader is recognized.
Thank you, sir. With regard to the central hearings panel, it's all other funds, but a lot of that is coming from a variety of different boards and
some of that agency. Some of that money could initiate as general fund for agency budgets.
Second point, if I may.
Follow up,
Representative
Schrader.
I think committee during the hearings would be very interested to see if indeed this has worked out as originally envisioned. I had some concerns myself last session regarding I didn't think things were that unfair to begin with, and the issue of increasing costs. There has been a tendency in the interim for that organization to kind of redevelop itself and almost become a separate agency, and I'm a little concerned about that and would hope the committee would watch that very, very closely.
Thank you, Representative Schrader.
And I would like to turn it over.
I'm sorry. Representative Winters is recognized.
Thank you. And along that line, you also might want to correlate that with the Attorney General's budget, because even though we have the hearings panel, if some of the notes, some of the information coming through is that the Attorney General's budget is also being increased as a result of what's happening here at this panel. You might want to note that.
Thank you, Representative Winters. Lori?
Mr. Chair, the representative of the committee, I'd like to turn this over to Monica Brown then from the budget and the Department of Administrative Services Budget Division.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think Lori did a fine job introducing myself, so just move on. The governor's recommended budget for the employment department is $1.66 billion. You'll see from this chart here, the largest portion of that is from non-limited other funds expenditures. These expenditures are for the unemployment benefits to claimants, and these estimated payments are based on the Department of Administrative Services' latest economic forecast and assume that 994,000 initial claims will be filed in 2103.
Representative Johnson is recognized.
Would you mind pulling the mic closer to you, please?
Could you raise your voice level to...
I will do the best I can.
Some of us don't shoot.
You bet. Not a problem.
I'm sorry. What was that? Thank you. Please proceed, Ms. Brown.
The governor's budget modifies the employment department's budget in several areas. First, in child care. In 1999, two child care programs were established to investigate all serious complaints against family care providers and to provide on-site health and safety reviews to newly registered family care providers. The governor's budget continues both programs into 2103 at the cost of $2.6 million federal funds. The budget would also extend on-site health and safety reviews to all family child care providers, not just the newly registered ones that occurred in 99-01. The addition of expanding the program to all providers is $1.1 million federal funds. A third area of expansion in the child care area is to increase the special payments to the 16 regional resource and referral agencies, and that increases at $2.5 million, and again, that's federal funds.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hill is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When discussing this child care piece, did the governor look at if there would be any savings by consolidating this child care program with the one on human resources?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, I'm not privy to that conversation going on. We can certainly check to see if the commission, Child Care Commission, discussed that, but I don't believe so. We can follow up on this.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed, Ms. Brown.
Okay.
Thank you for following up on that, if you would, please.
In other areas of the employment department, the governor's budget proposes to expand unemployment insurance fraud control efforts by adding 4 full-time equivalent positions and shifting the funding of 11 additional full-time equivalent positions to the Special Fraud Control Fund. These positions would provide additional prevention, discovery, and collection of unemployment insurance overpayments. And this is at a cost of $2.1 million other funds. Mr. Chair.
Representative Winters is recognized.
Thank you. Can you tell me how much currently is owing to the unemployment fund, the debt that hasn't been collected?
The latest number, Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, the latest number I have is from August of 2000, and at that point it was $33.7
million. Can't
follow up, Representative Winters.
Do you know or can you get us information that tells us what length of time it takes to collect that date and how quickly the agency is turning over those accounts to either revenue or to someone to try to collect that money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, I don't have that, but we can get that for you.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson is recognized.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winters already asked my question.
All right. Thank you. Please proceed, Ms. Brown.
The governor's budget also intensifies claimant reemployment services by adding 22 full-time equivalent positions. These positions would meet with unemployment insurance claimants in a personal interview, enroll them in the Oregon job selection system, allow them web access to current job orders, and provide them access to the Oregon labor market information system. And that cost of that addition is $2.4 million other funds. The governor's budget in the area of employment services eliminates the Jobs Plus program, which was a subsidized job program between adult and family service clients and unemployment insurance claimants. And finally, as Lori mentioned earlier, the central hearings panel is continued under the 4-year pilot project into 2001-03 at the current service level.
Representative Johnson is recognized.
Mr. Chair, is there an opportunity, what will happen to the people that currently hold those Jobs Plus jobs? Will they pass by attrition or will there be pink slips?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, clarifying, the people who were placed in Jobs Plus or the employees of the employment department, which are you asking?
Clients, the people that
the
were placed
clients?
In the job.
My understanding is those were limited duration placements, if they were, but we can follow up to see if there would be any left. My understanding is the depletion of the diversion that was funding those subsidies is expected to terminate around May of this biennium.
Thank you.
Representative Senator Yee first and then Senator Trill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I don't understand the rationale for eliminating the Jobs Plus program. This is to help the public assistance recipients become independent. So is it solely because of depletion of these funds, or what is the reason behind this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, at this point the sole reason is that there has not been another funding source identified. The latest survey that the Employment Department did of employers, most employers were aware of the program, but less than 40% at that time supported actually paying additional funding to support a Jobs Plus, or at least how that question was structured within the survey. So the elimination is, yes, the depletion of the fund and the absence of an identified source.
And you're saying only 40% of the employers support this program?
Mr. Chair, Senator D, no. Within the survey of the employers surveyed, approximately 70% were aware of the program. 40% responded that they would be willing to pay an additional amount to continue the program. It's not so much that they didn't support it. It was just the lack of willingness to necessarily support an additional amount on their tax to support it. And we can have the Employment Department provide you some additional information on those survey's results.
Yes. I would appreciate more information.
Thank you. Senator Troy is recognized.
does the jobs program itself continue, not jobs plus, but the jobs program?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, within the Employment Department, Jobs Plus is the only piece of it. With the jobs piece, I'm not the analyst for Department of Human Services, so I can't respond to that.
No, I would hope that something is being done there, especially with the jobs program. So it's in Human Resources, though.
Yeah. Senator Trow, we can have Human Resources respond to that.
Representative Schrader has some information, perhaps, that might be of use to us in that regard. Representative Schrader is recognized.
I was on the sub last time, and one of the issues that came up with Jobs Plus was that it was not doing any better result than jobs. They were down to the real hardcore unemployed at this point in time. Also, as an employer, it was tough for me to use Jobs Plus with some of the restrictions they had on it. And then furthermore, the Employment Division gave some pretty excellent detailed information that for every dollar we spend on Jobs Plus, we're losing about 33 cents. So it didn't seem like a good experiment to continue based on that. And so I think that's why the governor probably put it in here. Certainly the committee will want to review that information and see if that's still accurate.
Thank you for that clarification, Representative. Representative Hill is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to say I thought last session Jobs Plus was, you know, these wonderful accolades of success.
Yes.
So I'm just trying to, you know, bring, you know, I guess, see what 2 years will bring you.
Feeding success is.
Oh, well.
Thank you. Here's Senator Hughes recognized.
Ms. Brown, when you give us information about the Jobs Plus program, we also give us the recidivism rate of this program.
Yes.
Do they not continue with jobs very soon, and what are the reasons?
Excellent question. Thank you, Senator Eady.
Can I follow up?
And Representative Winters is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one observation. On your non-limited funds, you're looking for actually a slight growth. So am I correct that you're thinking that the unemployment rate is going to go up?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, I do not have the comparison on the initial claims. I know that it is tied to the latest economic forecast, and we can have the agency do the comparison.
On your trend line, it looks like you're going to forecast an increase in the unemployment rate.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, I can't speak to the increase in the employment rate, the number of total payments going out, so whether it's the rate, whether it's the average payment out. We can give you the we can have the agency provide you the details. But yes, we are anticipating larger or more payments going out the door. Whether it's total dollars or increase to the individual, I can't tell you.
Could you provide us with information that tells us whether or not we're going to experience a growth in the number of bodies or whether it's just an increase in dollars because we've raised the rate of payment? And if it is a growth of bodies, I can understand if you're talking about we've reached the level for Jobs Plus to where it's more hard to place individuals. But if we're going to see a growth in the unemployment rate, it seems to me then we've got to discuss this issue of whether or not this really is a practical approach.
I think the combination, according to the budget summary, is a total of $13.1 million in both elimination of the Jobs Plus program and reduction of the jobs overall. But your comment is a good one. That is to determine what the effect of that is when we examine that dynamically as opposed to the static model. Other questions? We'll proceed if not. Thank you. Okay.
We'd like to move on to the next agency then, which would be Housing and Community Services. Okay.
This is one of the Metro techies here, right?
Representative Hill. We're in trouble.
Representative Hill told me I couldn't call them Metro techies anymore.
There we go.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Rick Olson with the Legislative Fiscal Office, and I'm going to go over a couple of agencies with you this afternoon, the first being the the Housing and Community Services Department. The Housing and Community Services Department provides financing and support for the development of affordable housing in the state and for the delivery of services to economically needy citizens of the state of Oregon. The department administers federal and state programs to alleviate homelessness and poverty within the state. The State Housing Council is a seven-member board, which is appointed by the governor and provides policy oversight to the department. Nearly 80% of the governor of the department's total expenditures are related to its bond program and federal rent subsidies, and therefore are non-limited. bond revenue finances low-interest single-family mortgages and multifamily housing for low-income and/or senior housing, senior households. The general fund portion of the budget is used for homeless and emergency food assistance programs in the state. The other funds and federal funds provide federal housing subsidies, grants to housing developers for low-income housing construction, weatherization and other energy conservation efforts, heating cost subsidies, food distribution and nutrition programs, and finally the Mobile Home Ombudsman Program. This slide will reflect the history of the operating budget only. This does not include non-limited funds within the agency, but the operating budget only over the last three biennia as compared to the governor's recommended budget for the 2001-2003 biennium. The general fund, as you can see, has remained relatively flat since 1997-99. You can see a dramatic increase in the other funds for the 2001-2003 governor's recommended budget. This has to do with $30 million of lottery-backed bonds that will be issued for the community incentive fund. And that's the primary reason for the growth in the other funds there. Those funds will be used to promote and the development of affordable housing, near jobs and transportation, and rebuild rural and distressed communities, and also downtown areas and Main Street areas of communities throughout the state. Purpose of those incentive funds. I'm going to at this point invite Satish, our DAS analyst for this agency, to come up and talk about the governor's recommended budget and the issues driving that budget.
Welcome, Mr. Upadhyaya.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This is Satish Upadhyaya with the Department of Administrative Services, and I'll provide you with a highlight with some of the highlights of the governor's recommended budget for the Housing and Community Services Department. As Rick mentioned to you earlier, the total governor's recommended budget is $944.3 million total funds. This is a 1.1% increase from the 9901 legislatively approved budget. Now, some of the highlights. The budget adds resources to help the homeless. It's $1.4 million general fund. This actually is a reallocation of resources. The funds got shifted from the Housing Trust Fund to address the homeless assistance issue. The rate of those living under poverty is increasing. Approximately 8,000 people are homeless seeking emergency shelter or assistance every night. And in March 2000, 48% of those needing emergency shelter were turned away. So it is for these for this reason that the resources got reallocated for this purpose. Secondly, the budget adds resources for housing affordability and community development issues. It provides $5.1 million other funds and $5 million federal funds. Because home prices are increasing, fewer Oregonians are able to afford reasonable housing. Average time on waiting lists for rental assistance is typically 2 years. And there's also a growing population of working low-income Oregonians who are looking for affordable housing. The $5.1 million is as a result of Senate Bill 1149, the electric deregulation bill that passed last session. It provides 3% public purpose charge. In fact, it charges 3% for public purpose charge for all retail electric consumers. And Housing and Community Services Department gets the proceeds from this charge, which will be used to provide low-income housing development. The $5 million federal fund is to spend the federal community development block grants that HUD provides. And basically, these funds will be used to allow seniors and the disabled and others in need to remain independent in their communities, particularly where rehab costs are increasing and people are being forced to leave their homes. The budget provides $30.19 million from lottery-backed bonds for the Community Incentive Fund. The Community Incentive Fund was established by the last legislature, and it basically does three things. Like, it provides funding to revitalize downtowns and main streets. It helps develop affordable housing near jobs and transportation, and it'll also provide funding to rebuild rural and distressed communities. The budget increases the department's ability to provide energy assistance to the low income with new revenues from Senate Bill 1149. This is $23.5 million. The budget also transfers the Oregon Community Services Commission from the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development to this agency. The Oregon Community Services Commission, administers the America Corp and the Senior Corp programs.
Are there any questions of Satish at this point? Representative Winters is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Just a clarification. Could you clarify for me how we're doing both state and federal housing now, how that works with the federal housing? If there is a development that was federal, is that now turned over to the state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, I think you are talking about the HUD contract administration.
Mm-hmm.
The feds were doing the contracts by themselves till sometime last year. Then the Housing and Community Services Department became the agent. So now Housing and Community Services Department is the contract administrator for the federal HUD. And in the budget, you will see that there's a request for 12 positions for that purpose.
Follow-up, Follow-up. Representative.
When we become the agent for HUD, then do we have to implement, their guidelines and whatever provision that they had when we became that agent, is that correct?
Yes, Representative, that is the case.
I raise that because I had a concern from someone that we were becoming an agent for, and they were evicting or individuals who were currently in the housing to make room for the low income. So you had a paying individual who were asked to move under so that that housing could then
under an existing HUD project.
Under an existing HUD project. Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. Further comments or follow up with Mr. Upadhyay? Thank you very much. Thank you. Appreciate you very much.
Before we leave this agency, I did want to point out, reiterate a couple of the issues that will be coming before the subcommittee as we talk about this agency's budget. Again, there are several factors that indicate that the demand for affordable housing will continue to outpace the available supply during the next biennium. Housing costs are increasing faster than wages. The expected population growth and the increase in housing costs is likely to increase the demand for all types of housing, including low-income affordable housing and also emergency housing, emergency shelter. And as a follow-up to the question on the HUD housing, there are many of the HUD subsidized housing projects that are coming to the end of their contract period, and many of those property owners are opting to not renew that contract but are switching to market rate rental units. And that's reducing the supply of affordable housing for many of the citizens of Oregon as well. And The department's going to be addressing that issue somewhat during the budget hearings as well.
Senator Troy is recognized.
I just want to comment, thinking about the housing problem in the state and the need for low-cost housing and so forth. One of the ways to get at that, I suppose, is to subsidize low-cost housing. Another way is to increase the income of working families, and you could do that through some tax credits, making them refundable, and there are going to be some bills doing that, which would get more money in the pockets of working people so they could afford to afford their housing. We might look at those.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Senator Troll, that's correct. It's quite common for some of these lower-income families to spend 50% or more of their income on housing and leave very little for other living expenses.
Perhaps in that process, too, while we've got the Housing and Community Services Department before us in the full or in the subcommittee, perhaps it would be good to have someone of the certified smart people there to go ahead and testify what the cost of housing is increased by as a result of land use planning. I know that is a major element, the price of land and those kinds of issues that we administer as a part of the state increase the price of land. So it would be good to be able to see if we could maybe break out that as a part and parcel of the total costs being driven basically by the state.
Okay. I'll make note of that. And
thank you very much.
Ask the department to come prepare for that.
Any further questions of Mr. Olson relative to the Housing and Community Services Department? If not, we'll move on to Veterans Affairs.
Okay. The Department of Veterans Affairs has three different programs within their agency. The Veterans Home Loan Program is the largest of that, and it's funded entirely through other funds and provides loan servicing and department administration. The program provides home acquisition and home improvement loans to veterans at favorable interest rates. The Veterans Services Program provides counseling and claims assistance, conservatorship services, and also partners with counties and other local veterans organizations to support their programs. Most of the funding for the Veterans Services Program comes from the general fund, with some other funds coming from fees for the conservatorship services. And then finally, the Veterans Home Program operates a skilled nursing facility and Alzheimer's disease unit in the Dalles. The home opened in November of 1997 and has a bed capacity of 151 residents. The Veterans Home Program consists solely of other funds, and which come from residents, Medicare reimbursement, and a per diem amount that's received directly from the federal Department of Veterans Administration.
Representative Hayden is recognized.
And the current occupancy rate is?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hayden, the latest figure that I have is from October of 2000, and it was at 102 residents.
Out of 100 and what again?
151 is the capacity.
Two-thirds filled?
Yes, and I might point out, and you'll hear this from the department as well, actually beginning next week, I believe, they have just recently signed a contract with a different provider to run that facility. And part of the contract that they signed was to increase occupancy. And so when they come to testify next week, we can get the latest figures as to what their occupancy rate is and what their projections are. If I remember right, I believe they anticipate between 75 and 80% occupancy rate later on this year.
Thank you.
We'll have them address that. As you can see here, nearly 96% of the Department of Veterans Affairs budget is non-limited. That's debt service and loans that are out. The general fund portion is less than 1% of their total budget, and again goes towards Veterans Services Program. This slide shows, again, a historical perspective of the expenditures for the department. There's been a general decline in the number of loans being processed and serviced, as the number of eligible veterans has been declining. However, in the recent general election in November, ballot measure 83 was passed. Prior to that measure, the Department was prohibited from making loans to any veteran who entered active military duty before or after December 31st, 1976. And with the passage of ballot measure 83, they are now allowed to provide loans to post 1976 veterans who are eligible for those loans, and that is reflected in this slide, the increase in that non-limited amount from the current biennium to the governor's recommended budget. The operating expenses for the department in the governor's recommended budget continues at current service levels. There are no enhancements in that. Questions?
The question, Senator Troy, is recognized.
Is the increase you have based on the ballot measure 83, is that just merely a projection? Have you any idea of how much that's going to be used?
Mr. Chair, Senator Troll, that is merely a projection. We, at this time, there's nothing, no history there yet to come up with any better number than that. Fortunately, it is non-limited funds, and we have some flexibility in that. But we will be tracking that closely.
I think that's a conservative estimate, or, you know.
Mr. Chair, Senator Troll, I'm not sure whether that's a conservative estimate. The number of veterans that are eligible for the loans post 1976, when you compare prior to 1976, is a relatively low number. And so that combined with the continued decrease in the number of loans that are being serviced, many of these older loans are being paid off and will not be reflected in this any longer. So I think the combination of that is how they've come up with this number, and we'll just have to track it and see.
Thank you very much, Rick. And we have 1 hour, Department of Transportation.
Good afternoon, members of the committee, Chair Butler. I'm Susie Jordan. From the Legislative Fiscal Office, and I'm the analyst on the Department of Transportation. Lori just tried to trick me coming up here, so I stumble over my words, it's all her fault. The Department of Transportation is responsible for managing the majority of and maintaining Oregon's transportation system, or managing and maintaining Oregon's transportation system. The Aeronautics Division became an independent department in the 99-01 biennium through legislation passed in the last session, so its budget is not included here, and I won't be going over any of the budget for aviation until your public hearing, unless you have some questions. Historically, the department's primary focus was on constructing and maintaining highways. In more recent biennia, their focus has broadened to include alternative modes of transportation, for example, transit and rail, and reducing the use of the automobile in congested areas. Policy direction is provided by a five-member transportation commission that is appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. The director is now appointed directly by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. That is also legislation that was passed in the last biennium. And the governor's recommended budget going into the 01-03 budget is $1.8 billion with 4,743.36 FTE. Highway fund sources and uses has been a topic of particular interest in past legislatures because the revenue generated by these sources is not keeping pace with growing needs, so I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about where these sources come from. The highway fund itself has three primary sources: weight mile tax, which provides about 26% of the revenue in the highway fund, the motor vehicle fuels tax, which provides 53%, and then licenses and fees that provides 21% of the highway fund. In addition to the highway fund, there are federal highway monies that are used to build and maintain our highways. And it provides about 24% of the total revenues for the department in that regard. These resources are spent then on highway construction, engineering, maintenance operations, planning, right-of-way acquisition, and support services.
It's 124%, but that's okay. My math.
Two funds.
No. The highway fund was the three first ones, and the 24% was of total funds
okay.
for the department.
Okay, that's 100% and 25. All right.
Yeah, what's going on here? Okay, Wait Mile. Trucks in Oregon pay taxes based on weight and distance according to the cost responsibility. Cost responsibility is now a constitutional amendment, allocates revenue responsibility for future highway system costs among vehicle classes in proportion to the cost burdens on the highway system. The weight mile taxes generally increase when motor vehicle fuel taxes increase. In 1999, however, weight mile taxes were reduced approximately 6% because automobile share of the cost responsibility increased. The adjustments to tax rates were recommended in the 1999 Oregon Highway Cost Allocation Study, which is done on a biennial basis. And it estimated that heavy trucks as a whole were currently overpaying for road use by 6%, and the legislature then subsequently reduced those rates. Weight mile taxes are dealt with in the Revenue Committee, so you won't see that in Ways and Means other than in adjusting budgets to go along with revenue sources. This is a chart of the fuel tax rates and kind of gives you a history of fuel taxes since 1968. You'll note on the chart that between 1982 and 1984, the legislature passed a 1 cent increase effective in January 1 of each of those years to match increased federal revenue. And then during the mid to late 80s, a majority of the increases in revenue were devoted to modernization of highway, Oregon highways, and that is now approximately $54 million a year. There is, I have seen some legislation that, the Transportation Commission is proposing legislation to do away with that dedication to modernization and allow that money to fall into the priorities of the Transportation Commission, primarily for preservation and maintenance. In 1985, another two-stage increase of 1 cent effective 86 and 87 was the modernization money. In 89, the legislature passed a 2 cent fuel tax increase, and then in 1991, there was another two-stage increase in fuel taxes effective at the beginning of the year in 1991 and 1993, and there have been no fuel tax increases since 1993. There have, however, been increases in consumption, which allows the highway fund revenue to grow. This is a slide of a 22-year history that shows that the trend is continuing upward, but in the last 4 years, you'll see that it is slow. The growth is slowing. In 1999, there is only a 2% growth, where the year before there had been a 6% growth in fuel consumption. So you can see from that statistic that it is shrinking. Primarily, that's probably attributed to the increase in gas prices at the fuel pump. And whether that trend is going to continue, we don't know. Economists are projecting a 2% increase or a 2.5%, I think, increase in fuel consumption for the next biennium, being conservative.
Representative Hill is recognized.
I was just noting that I think it's like 28-year history there at a minimum. So,
very good observation. Okay, this slide is gross revenue projected for the biennium is $2.5 billion. Highway other funds combined with federal funds make up 98% of all transportation revenues. This chart includes revenues that are transferred to city, county, and other agencies. This next slide that I'm going to show you shows how revenue collections are distributed. The three major sources of funds at the top, weight mile, fuels tax, and licenses and fees, have statutory requirements to be distributed before they are allocated to the highway fund. For example, in Waite Mile, we have to take out, there are some dedications for state police and the motor carrier operations, and those expenses are removed before the $366 million is then put into the highway fund. That's the same with a fuel tax, where there are some transfers, revenue transfers, before they go into the highway fund. And licenses and fees, primarily DMV operations, and a small amount of revenue transfers for the ATV fees, fees that are collected, fuel taxes, marine board, that sort of thing. That leaves then $1.3 million for highway fund. Then out of the highway fund, we distribute to the cities and counties the amount of money that they are by statute allowed, and then that leaves the state with $827 million for state highways. Next chart just gives you an indication that the trend is continuing upward for driver licenses, vehicle registrations, and that it's increasing slightly faster than the population increases, so more people are getting licensed in vehicles than are moving into the state. And this chart shows that vehicle miles traveled is increasing at a steady rate. At the same time, the number of miles of road to travel on is remaining flat. There are approximately 84,000 miles statewide, and that hasn't grown much, or if at all, in the last several biennium. ODOT's emphasis is on maintenance and preservation, with few resources going to the increasing capacity.
84,000 total statewide?
84,408 miles. Statewide.
Okay. I think 84,000 of those is in one road in my district.
Come on.
Okay, the Oregon Department of Transportation, we talked about, is responsible for managing the transportation system, and it operates out of a structure consisting of these 11 program areas. The highway program in the last biennium was broken down into another subset of 11 programs so that the legislature could see where those dollars went. That is the primary or the largest share of expenditures in the department, and they are the maintenance, bridge operations, highway planning, emergency relief, preservation, modernization, safety, special programs, and local governments, and they each have a separate expenditure limitation in the budget bill. And this little map in the middle just shows you that the organizationally, the department is broken into five regions, and each of these services are provided on a regional basis. And now I'm going to have Linda Gilbert come up and talk about the governor's budget for the Department of Transportation.
Good afternoon, Chair Butler, members of the committee. Linda Gilbert, DAS Budget and Management. As Susie said, I will be discussing now the expenditure side of the budget. We've had a lot of discussion about the revenue side. The first slide shows that in the 0103 governor's recommended budget, the highway program is 73% of the total budget. Also, the total budget, as Susie mentioned, is about $1.8 billion. Highways at $1.3 billion. This display also shows the other program units proportionally in the overall budget. And the next slide takes the yellow piece and breaks it down into the various highway divisions. Within the highway program, 71% or $906 million is planned to be spent on a combination of the blue slices, maintenance, modernization, preservation, and bridge. And within these, the primary focus in the 0103 governor's recommended budget is preservation and bridge preservation. These are projects that rehabilitate, rebuild, or extend the service life of existing highways, and that's 34% or $432 million of the resources. other highway programs in the yellow area are highway safety, operations, planning, emergency relief, local government, and special programs. Moving to the next slide, next display, this shows that over time, ODOT's expenditure budget has been essentially flat. From 93-95 through 97-99, there are actual expenditures shown. 99-01 is an estimate, and then 2001-03 is the governor's recommended budget. It reflects the impact of an unchanged gas tax since 1993. As to the display itself, it shows expenditure trends by fund type. The top band, very dark, is federal funds. In 0103, that total is about $43 million. And that's followed by the next band is other funds non-limited. It's about $65 million in 0103, and it's around 3.7% of the budget. Within non-limited, there are two components. One is debt service. The other is support services, such as reprographics and fleet management. The third band is, the red band is federal as other. This is about $604 million. Generally, it's for highway project reimbursement from the federal government. The widest band is other funds, the highway fund that we've been talking about. About $1 billion in 0103, or 57% of the budget. Finally, at the bottom, nearly invisible, is a combination of general funds at $18.2 million and lottery funds at $20 million. General funds are used for public transit and rail, split about evenly. Lottery funds are passed through the Department of Transportation at the rate of about $20 million per biennium to pay for light rail debt service. The following three displays address budget issues in the governor's budget. The first, as you've been hearing, is revenue. Revenue remains relatively flat because of the, in part because of the failure of the most recent gas tax initiative. That, of course, was ballot measure 82 on the May 1999 ballot. It would have provided an additional $238 million. But because there hasn't been an increase since 93, revenue is flat. There is also no new gas tax proposed in the governor's 0103 budget. As a result, the 0103 budget is less than a 1% increase over 97-99 actuals, and it's about a 1.5% increase over the 99-01 estimates. In order to live within this relatively flat funding, the governor's budget focuses $45.5 million on bridge and highway preservation or pavement preservation projects, doing this by shifting some projects to a later biennium and making specific program reductions in the agency that I will talk about in a later display. It needs to be noted that despite the focus on bridge and highway preservation, road conditions are expected to continue to deteriorate from the roughly 78% fare or better that they are now. And while there is no new gas tax proposed, the next display shows where the governor's budget does propose to change some fees, and that would be within the driver and motor vehicle department. I'd like to give a little background on the DMV fees. There are essentially two types of fees, fees on drivers and fees on vehicles. Fees on drivers are expected to cover the cost of the service that they provide, in other words, to be self-supporting fees. The fees on vehicles are not only expected to support themselves, but to provide revenue to the highway fund in order to compensate for vehicle damage to roads. When the fees on the vehicle side do not end up sending money to the highway fund, the highway ends up subsidizing DMV instead of the other way around. And the 99 legislature, in a budget note to ODOT, required DMV to report on fee adequacy, which fees were actually supporting the activities for which they were charged. DMV reported to the emergency board during the interim on those fees that did not, and then the governor included in the budget proposals to adjust those specific fees. They have mostly to do with things like problem drivers or replacements of license or replacements of license plates, things like that. The package yields a total of $32.6 million. $22.6 million goes to the highway fund to eliminate the highway subsidy of DMV. And the remaining $10 million covers restorations in the amount of $4.2 million and enhancements of $5.8 million. The restorations restore positions in field offices. There are other restorations having to do with field offices. And with respect to new programs, there are some information systems upgrades, and there are also about six or seven specific items having to do with the problem driver program.
Senator Dukes is recognized.
The $1.8 million for the field offices, does that reverse any of the six closures?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, I believe that it will. I have some detail on dollars for restoration. What I have on that is field office staffing, and it's not more specific than that, but we can certainly get that and will during the regular hearings.
Does it seem to me that maybe it was just to enhance field offices where we've chipped away at them over time, but I was curious as to whether any of those six were going to be kept open.
I believe that, again, I'll have to get you details later, but I think there is a little reopening, and in other cases, it's simply getting the staff back up to appropriate levels within other offices.
Thank you. Representative Hill is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. don't we kick into eight-year licenses in this biennium? And so in terms of there'll be a increased revenue, which in future biennium will have decreased because the revenue won't show up then. I'm just curious how...
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, I believe that was in the 9901. Yeah, in the 9901 biennium, where we expected increased revenues from the eight-year license cycle, and then it declines after that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, the legislation was passed in the last biennium, and the eight-year license cycle began this current biennium and will continue into 2103, and I believe that the ending, you know, that this will be, the peak is in this biennium, and then it will start to decline and level out in the following biennium.
Thank you.
Gilbert?
The final display shows other actions that were taken in the governor's recommended budget. Specifically reductions, they fall into two areas, one general fund and the other in other funds. Because of the statewide general fund shortfall, about which you've heard very much by now, nearly every single state agency that had general fund was required to take some kind of a reduction. The Department of Transportation's general fund reductions fall into two areas, transit and rail. And within rail, the reduction is just under 10% of their total general fund allocation. It is not a reduction that will result in an impact on passenger rail specifically. The trains will still run, as many trains as are running now and as often as are running now. Within the public transit reduction, again, it's about 10% of transit's general fund, and it will have the effect of slowing the bus replacement schedule. So a bus that perhaps should be replaced at 12 years and might be replaced at 15 might go even a little bit longer as a result.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Dukes is recognized.
If we're not affecting passenger rail with the $900,000, is it freight rail?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes.
It has one of the tightest budgets I've ever seen. And so $900,000 is a lot of money to them.
General fund is not used for freight.
Okay.
It supports only the passenger rail portion. It is, the agency is still working out how they're going to do this, but they are firmly instructed that it is not to affect the passenger rail.
This is one of those agencies that does that. It says, yeah, we know you spend 90% of your money here, but don't cut that. Just cut something else. We can't afford it. Mr. Chair, we can't afford to lose staff in that division either. I mean, literally trying to get Amtrak services and things like that around the state. They work a lot of hours just to try to connect this entire state. We'd be really concerned about what exactly it is we're going to lose on this one.
It'd be interesting to see the ridership and so forth relative to what was put in place in this last session as well, to see if the expenditures that were made in the last session were truly justified to draw people from across the state, from east to west and vice versa.
I can only speak for my part of the state, Mr. Chair, but I think they got more than their money's worth.
Good.
That they've spread it even further than they had ever anticipated going.
Great. I'm glad to hear that.
I think we need to be concerned about the freight lines as well as the others. And, I know we put some money from the emergency board out into keeping some lines open that are pretty essential.
We don't haul our cattle to rail on light rail and or to market in light rail in Eastern Oregon.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Winters is recognized.
Thank you. Along following up on the question of Senator Duke, if this isn't going to affect passengers, will we get a list of what it will affect?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, yes. There will be a specific accounting of that.
Very good. Go ahead, Ms. Gilbert.
Within other funds, in order to provide as much funding as possible for bridge and pavement preservation projects, or in other words, the $45.5 million, $41 million of projects currently within the STIP, or the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, are moved out of the 0103 biennium and into a later biennium, postponed. These projects are not eliminated. It's not anticipated that they would be eliminated. They're just pushed back. Within Transportation and Growth Management, there is a reduction of one position within ODOT, 2.5 positions within the Department of Land Conservation and Development, for which ODOT had been providing the funding. And the bulk of the reduction is actually in grant funds.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Dukes?
Could you provide me with a sheet that shows me what TGM does these days? That's one little group that's morphed more times than you can shake a stick at, and I'm just curious as to what they do these days.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, yes, we will provide that.
Thank you, Senator Dukes. Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As long as we're asking for detail, could you share the positions at the Department of Land Conservation that we've got or anticipated?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, do you mean position descriptions? Or?
Yes, precisely. But what were those people doing?
I believe that they're planners, but again, this is something I need to follow up on to be specific on.
Thank you very much. And that detail will be provided in the subcommittee.
Thank you.
As well.
Is this the agency doing this? Or
please proceed.
Moving on to central services, there's a reduction of four positions, a fiscal coordinator, two positions involved in training, and a clerical position. The other reductions, the rest of the reduction in the package, or about half the package, is in data processing and professional services. Specific expenditure line. Finally, in highway planning, there is a reduction of $1 million, and it's within the professional services accounting. There are no positions involved with that. So to summarize, the governor's proposed budget for the Department of Transportation for 0103 is 1.5% increase over 9901. It exists within relatively flat revenues with the exception of DMV's fee changes. It focuses resources on bridge and highway pavement preservation.
Thank you very much.
Chair, can I ask one more question?
Senator Dukes, please go ahead.
I know $45.5 million of the reductions is other funds. And that's, I'm assuming, gas tax, IC money, something, not general fund. Am I right? Susie's nodding. That's close enough. I'm just curious as to why we're doing, are these reductions as a result of the shortfall because we did highway projects up what we could up front and funded them, or is this because every agency had to take a hit?
Representative Butler, Senator Dukes, these are not so much reductions as reallocation of other fund in order to free up as much other fund as possible to focus on bridge and highway preservation programs.
Okay. And do we have you seen a list yet from the Attorney General's office of, they were doing that review of use of highway funds? Have you seen a list yet?
Chair Butler, Senator Dukes, I have not seen that list yet. That is still in progress and still not quite final.
Thank you.
So that you'll know that on the central services, the accounting positions there, those are being eliminated. Probably the accounts are being replaced by machines with no moving parts. So I want that to be shown that the accountants are contributing here as we move forward. Absolutely. Accountants without heads. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, we are... Nope.
We're at an end.
Yeah, I believe we're finished.
I just wanted to... I'll just follow up with reiterating that the increase in DMV fees will be reviewed by this subcommittee. Fee increases come to Ways and Means. They don't go to the Revenue Committee, typically. So you will have an opportunity to go through and evaluate whether those are appropriate increases or not. There are increases in positions in the rail program, but they don't relate to freight rail necessarily. That remains unfunded at this point.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Gilbert. Thank you, Susie. Senator Crowe is recognized.
Just a question about the Department of Aviation. How will its budget be reviewed, and who does that, and which committee does it go to, and all that stuff?
Johnson volunteers.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the aviation budget will go to the Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee. In fact, the budget is being scheduled beginning on Friday of this week for subcommittee review, and it goes through just as any other budget will.
Okay. Why is it not part of this report? Because it's technically not in the Department of Transportation?
That's correct. Okay. It's a small budget, and we were just highlighting the higher
small but
level.
Important budget.
Very important.
Doing a good job.
Very important.
Okay. If there's nothing further at that point, we'll go ahead and adjourn this portion of the Ways and Means full.
You that got out on.
Yeah.
That's good. No reason to.
Thank you.